And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Bonnie Berman is on a short vacation. Today we look into what's known as P3s, that is, public-private partnerships. We have City of Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff with us. His district is home to many of the public-private partnerships in Miami-Dade. Welcome to you, Commissioner. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jillian Thomas. She's the president and CEO of the Miami Science Museum, and the museum is under construction in downtown. Welcome to you, Jillian Thomas.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And we're also joined by Al Dotson. He's a partner at Bildsen Sumberg, and he's in charge of government relations and land use practice. Welcome to you, Mr. Dotson.
My pleasure to be with you as well.
We also have with us Dan Ricker. He's publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report and a frequent contributor to Topical Currents.
Always a pleasure.
Ken, good to see you. Al Dotson, give us the simple lowdown on how P3s work. In the simplest terms.
Sure. A public-private partnership is an opportunity for government to address the needs of the public, infrastructure projects, or projects that have a public significance by tapping into the private sector know-how and the private sector financing. It's an opportunity for both parties to come together in partnership where they both share the risk and the rewards of a successful project.
And Commissioner Sarnoff, what risk is taken by government property owners?
I'm not sure there is a very much of a risk. I guess the risk is that the project won't come off as intended. But the bigger risk is doing nothing, because the need of the public is demanding and great. And the resources government have are always diminishing. And so by creating this PPP, you're creating opportunities. The tunnel was done this way. A number of major projects have been done this way. And you actually start addressing these huge needs from this community standpoint that have never been budgeted, have never been well thought out by elected officials.
But there's profit being made by private entities on public lands.
Well, in part that's true, and that's why you get the private sector's interest in wanting to do this. And the private sector, if the plan is well thought out and well envisioned, will create a public benefit for the public that will be in part financed by government, and in part private sector will make a small profit involved with doing that. And that's why they would want to be involved to begin with.
Jillian Thomas of the Science Museum, tell us how the P3 is set up for your organization.
Yeah, I've worked on several of these kind of partnerships before, elsewhere as well as here, and they're really vital for regeneration of downtowns where the private sector on their own couldn't do it, and neither could the public sector. So in our case, the voters voted in 2004 with a general obligation bond for funding to construct the new Science Museum and the new Art Museum, and the rest of the funding is coming through private supporters, and we have a not-for-profit status. So the funding comes from, or much of the funding comes from the county. The land comes from the city. It's a really great location, and it's pivotal to the success of the downtown regeneration. And it's this mix of private and public funding that will create this resource that will have an enormous economic impact on the future of Miami's development. It wouldn't happen any other way. That's generally the case with these cultural regeneration projects. The private sector on their own can't do it. The public sector on their own generally doesn't have enough money to do it all on their own. And so this partnership really gets the community behind it, and they won't be successful unless the community is behind it. So I think it's a really great example of communities coming together to achieve their shared goals.
But public entities have built infrastructure for hundreds of years. Why suddenly does it have to have a private influence?
I think they've always had some private. You take the Smithsonian Institution, that was a major gift that set it up in the first place. So it's not sudden at all. I mean, you go back to any kind of cultural institution, many of them have had private support right from the start. And I think it's very healthy because they're very responsive to the local communities. They need to be in order to be supported by the local communities. So it's a really great partnership to make these things happen. And it can happen both with the public and the private for-profit sector and the public non-profit sector. In our case, it's non-profit working with the public sector, but with also support from for-profit
companies.
What are
some of the non-profit entities that are...
Well, the non-profit entity is the 501c3 that is the Museum of Science, right? And then we have support from organizations like the Knight Foundation, the Bachelor Foundation, major foundations in town that see the real value of cultural and educational entities in downtown as a really great support for this community becoming that creative city of the future that we all see as a great ambition and a place for Miami as a big international city.
Dan Richter, you closely follow South Florida government and politics, so you've seen a lot of this being set up.
Right. I was actually thinking of the Marlins Stadium as another public-private partnership that perhaps...
It hasn't gone over so well.
Gone over so well. But also you have the Public Health Trust in Jackson, which has been, you know, depending on the dynamics. I think my point is, while everyone is in the group so far seems to be very supportive... You have to be, you know, skeptical. And in the case of perhaps the museums, I know the Inspector General wasn't allowed to attend their meetings. I'm not allowed to attend their meetings as a member of the press. And so,
of whose meetings?
Well, for the not-for-profits that are doing both the Museum of Art and the Museum of Science. And the question is, while they're getting over $200 million in public GOB dollars from '04, you know, I hope to God that they're matching their fundraising goals, because that was the key component. And that is mostly the key component when you talk about public-private partnerships. How well is the private side doing, and will it come back to somehow bite the municipality or government entity in their general funds?
Commissioner, have you considered any of those possibilities?
Well, I'd like to go on record as saying I did not support the Marlins Stadium because that was an example of a poor public-private partnership. But to say one poor public-private partnership, you should not consider these things, is really to throw the baby out with the bathwater. With regard to the Museum of Science and the Museum of Art, I have seen their pledges, and I've seen them come in, so I know they're right on track for where they want to be. What Jillian is saying, this happens to be a not-for-profit arm, which is the Museum of Science, Museum of Art, and they are partnering with the county, which was the big GOB generator of 2004, and now with the city, with the siting of these particular museums on either Museum Park or Bicentennial, whatever you'd like to call it. And now we're moving forward with a conservancy, which I was asked to do from the Trust for Public Land, to help fund these parks, to get these parks up to the standard to sit in front of a $300 million museum and a $400 million museum.
Al Dotson, tell us more about the Miami Beach Convention Center project.
I'd love to do that, but I want to touch on something that was just mentioned. You know, it's important to recognize there have been some very successful public-private partnerships. The expansion of our roadway network throughout our state has been done that way. The port tunnel that you mentioned is going forward in a public-private partnership way. And there are all kinds
of... Who's the private partners there, roughly?
In the port tunnel?
Yeah.
There's a consortium of companies. Some are local, some are based outside the United States. And the reason for the international involvement in public-private partnerships, as mentioned earlier, is many cities around our world have addressed their infrastructure needs through public-private partnerships and have done so very well for decades, if not centuries. With respect to the Miami Beach Convention Center, another public asset that throws off significant economic impact into the community, that is moving forward to both expand and modernize the facility. That will include a public component, which is the convention center itself. There's a private component that is the 800-room convention center hotel. Presently, there's no hotel on site. That will allow this community to go after conventions that are high impact and have a high economic impact on our community. Those are conventions that we presently cannot attract. There are restaurants, there are hotels, there are a number of businesses that will benefit from those types of conventions coming to our community. So when you have a public-private partnership like the Convention Center that will attract that type of tourism into our community, the significant throw off of economic activity, not only in Miami Beach but throughout Miami-Dade County, will absolutely benefit the public.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email is available, radio@WLRN.org. Tell me, Commissioner, there's talk about on the horizon that sewer and water infrastructure would also qualify as a P3. I think some people might be a little touchy about that controlling the water in private interest, and what's to stop them from raising rates to ridiculous numbers?
Now, you know, I share that concern, and the problem with the water is the need is so great, and this has been delayed for so many years. What should have been addressed 10 or 15 years ago is now a problem that is almost insurmountable, and it may need a touch of public-private partnership, because our rates could easily double and may even triple. And you pay a lot of money now, and my concern is that we're addressing it so late in the game. Along with that, you also have a problem of global warming, our sea level increase. We're not addressing any of these things. We're not really looking at it from the needs that we really have. Today, I believe, on CBS Morning News, they were addressing Miami as the most susceptible city to global rising of waters. We're not really doing anything to look at that. I think inevitably, by the time it does affect us in one probably grand way, we're going to be looking at all solutions. I think it's going to end up looking at even PPPs, because we haven't done as a community what we should have done as good stewards for the past 20 years, improving these water needs. And matter of fact, in the Grove, there's a moratorium on building because nobody addressed the needs until the federal government shut us down and said no net increase. It's a horrible place you want to be. You don't want to be in that place. So I don't concede. I don't disagree with what you're saying to some respects, but that doesn't give us the solution. And the solution may be a PPP of some sort. I haven't studied it enough. What I do know is when government doesn't do what its job is supposed to do, and it becomes a maintenance nightmare or an infrastructure nightmare, and that's about where we are with water, almost at the infrastructure nightmare.
We're talking about public-private partnerships with Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff, also Jillian Thomas, Al Dotson, and Dan Ricker. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. And we return 21 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman is on a brief vacation. We're visiting with Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff. Also, Jillian Thomas, she's the president and CEO of the Miami Science Museum, and also Al Dotson, a partner at Bilson Sumberg. He's in charge of government relations and land use practice. Mr. Dotson, so the private companies assume the risk. What happens if they go under?
Well, I don't accept the underlying
the
assumption in your question. First of all, there can be a sharing of risk. As Commissioner Sarnoff mentioned earlier, the public is investing in this project, and the public wants to make sure the project moves forward successfully. And sometimes the public invests its own dollars to make sure the project moves forward, and sometimes you'll have a private component that moves forward. Typically, when a public-private partnership is done correctly, the government will make sure that it has the appropriate guarantees from the private sector developer or contractor.
What may they be, these guarantees?
The guarantees could be in the form of, if it's a construction project, a construction guarantee or bond, so that there is a bonding company that the government can look to complete the project should the private sector entity not be able to do so for one reason or another. It's also important that the public sector look at each and every one of the private participants to make sure they had the financial capacity and the experience to deliver on whatever it is they've agreed to do or been selected to do. And I'm going to come back to the example that was used earlier. The fact that a particular public-private partnership may not have gone the way that we would have liked does not mean that we haven't gotten smarter as a community, that our elected officials haven't learned, that the private sector hasn't learned, and that we're not focused on doing this better, because we are. We absolutely are as a community, recognizing that our infrastructure needs must be addressed, and the way we do it together with the public and private sector working together must be done in a way that both parties and the public benefit.
Jillian Thomas of the Miami Science Museum, are all of your private partners nonprofits, or do you also have profit ones in there too?
Yeah, we do have people that support the museum, but they're donating
money. You mean individuals?
No, we have companies also. Wells Fargo, Ryder are two great examples of corporate partners that we have that are supporting the new museum. And we've had that. We have AT&T have supported some of our programs. For the Science and Technology Museum, because part of what we do is talking about how science and technology can help you for the future, there's a big interest in companies in supporting the kind of work that we do as we move forward. So we have both. We have everything.
How is the progress going on the construction there?
If you drive to South Beach anytime, you can see it. We're more than halfway up the planetarium and up to the second floor. So we were not completing till 2015, but it's going really well. I wanted to say something else about these partnerships, that I think it's really important at the beginning that what everybody wants to get out of it is really clearly on the table. And these can be a wide range of things. It's not just the financial aspects of it, though that is very, very important. So many of these public-private partnerships that are focusing on regeneration also look at how people are going to acquire skills as they go forward and the kind of training and jobs that are offered as part of it. So, for example, with the county and the general obligation bond, there's a target for the amount of the funding that will directly go to people working in Miami-Dade, and we're tracking as we go along the amount of funding that's coming directly back into the county. And those, I think, are really important criteria, because if you don't set those sorts of criteria at the beginning, you know, you can always do things differently, bring people in from outside, which in some cases you do because the skills are not all here. But I think setting those overall community goals for public-private partnerships are really important, and something comes out of it.
Dan Ricker, Watchdog Report. Are you satisfied that there's been public input into this? There doesn't seem to have been referenda.
No, you had the projects. 04 GOP, $2.9 billion.
General obligation bond,
which is all these excluding, well, the convention center is getting $50 million of that, I think. But there were part of 300 projects that were listed under that umbrella. And, you know, in the case of Museum Park, the question was, that's a 29-acre park. Should that have somehow been the central park of, you know, Miami? Or what we're doing now by putting to this facilities that will end some of the blight or some of the homelessness that might be there now. But it's still, it wasn't really put to a vote. And it happens to be waterfront land. And that's the other thing is when some of these public-private partnerships kind of really push the envelope, that's what makes the general public we're all insiders here, skeptical about what may have been planned or, you know, is it the best way to use that?
A lot of people, of course, were always complaining they didn't have a chance to vote on the Marlin Stadium.
Well, that's another example.
Well, can I say something with regard to what Dan had said, which is, you know, that particular park, which is Museum Park or Bicentennial Park, whatever you want to call it, that was a vacuous park. That park has had nobody living there except for about 16 homeless people for the past 20 years. The day that it opened with Noguchi, I think, or Namaguchi, if I'm committing it wrong. If you remember the day it opened, there was a murder committed because nobody had ever
pretty
fought.
Much ended it.
Right. And at the day it opened, it ended. So, in the words of Jane Jacobs, that was a vacuous park. That park had no attraction to anyone, no gravitational pull. These two museums are like the sun. They will have gravitational pull. They'll pull people into the park. And then we'll have a great Central Park in Miami, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, being a New Yorker, Central Park has a zoo. Central Park has a museum. Central Park has a restaurant. These are all things that make parks great. Just because you have a piece of dirt doesn't mean people will go there. You've got to make it interesting to people today. You've got to draw them in. This is a three-sided park that there's no access.
But Mark, look at what's happening in that area. You have the expansion of the port. You have the addition of the museum. You have what will take place on Watson Island. Downtown Miami continues to become a live-work location. These P3s, and you use the word three or four times, regeneration, it has absolutely helped regenerate downtown Miami. And all the P3s we're talking about, even some of the bad ones, help us as a community better ourselves, and I don't think we should lose sight of that. More importantly, the idea of making sure that there are people from the community who participate in the construction and learn skills has become part and parcel of what, in this particular case, the City of Miami CRA has made sure of as part of almost every agreement they enter into. So that collateral benefit beyond the financial component has continued to benefit this community. And as we've gotten smarter, we'll continue to grow the capacity of our community to move forward with projects like this.
Of course, we don't have anyone representing Miami-Dade County on this program.
By the way, and Dade County does have, they're also talking about allocation and everything else. It's not just the local CRA.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, but we have a listener who's emailed Laura. She says, what about a public-private partnership for the library system? Seems like that would be a great opportunity. Anyone would like to comment on that?
Well, you have a library district, but go ahead, Alfie.
Just the reason I mentioned earlier that somehow we're a little late to the party on public-private partnerships. In Europe, public-private partnerships have been used for all kinds of projects, including dormitories, libraries, housing, office needs. And as we get smarter about the use of public-private partnerships, libraries and all of our underutilized public assets, could probably benefit from some public component to move forward our private needs, our public needs.
I was going to say something.
The premise of your show is that these things can be subject to abuse. Everything can be subject to abuse. That's just the nature of promulgating something. But when done properly, you will get infrastructure that London has seen, that Madrid has seen, that Barcelona has seen. You go there and you think to yourself, how did they come up with this? How did they tax their people? And they did in part tax their people more than we're willing to tax our people. But just as Al said, and as I think Julian, who's probably from Europe, could tell us better than us, they did it through PPPs. And as you said, we're late to the game, but we're getting in the game of these three Ps. And we have such infrastructure needs that if we don't start using the P's, we're going to go nowhere because the elected officials of our town are not tax and spend people. They don't want to increase taxes to fill these needs.
We were speaking with Mark Sarnoff. He's a Miami commissioner, city commissioner. Also, Jillian Thomas of the Miami Science Museum and attorney Al Dotson. We're talking about public-private partnerships. Also with the Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker. Let's take another short break. We'll be back with more. And 31 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker, also Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff, Jillian Thomas, President and CEO of the Miami Science Museum, and Al Dotson, a partner at Bildson Sumberg. He's in charge of government relations and land use practice. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and also email radio at WLRN.org. Let's take a first caller. We've got Mark. He's in Miami Gardens. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Sir, your panel sounds, what they're saying sounds so nice, and they speak it so eloquently. But I wonder about the accountability. I've had the opportunity to be on some of these contracts with these PPPs and observe them from an insider point of view. And a lot of things you're saying, I haven't seen personally. Like, for instance, the gentleman talks about the PP3s using employer teaching job skills. Well, I find that very difficult to believe when most of the jobs for the skill position are going to people outside the county, outside the state. a lot of times the people in these communities do not have the educational background to even qualify for some of these jobs or have the foundation to do the job. And then as far as the abuse issue, yes, abuse is everywhere. Abuse could be anywhere. But what is the accountability? What steps are the county and the city using to account for this abuse? What actions are taken to punish those who abuse the system? Those, you seem to escape over those issues. Can I get an answer from anybody on the panel about that?
Sure, I'd like to address that.
It's L. Dotson.
Address that directly. First of all, understand, too, in a public-private partnership, you have a private business that is now subjecting itself to public scrutiny. And the role that Dan and the Watchdog Report play are very important in that regard. Second, I'm going to give you a very specific example. The University of Miami Life Science Center that Wexford is developing. In that particular case, a private developer and a public-private partnership came forward and agreed, one, to local contractors and laborers on that project, and there was an accountability. There was a reporting that was very specific and very detailed. Second, help develop the workforce through training, even those who could not do the work as part of the construction. We wanted to make sure that they were trained, so they put in place a training component. Third, there was a recognition that once the building was built, there needed to be employees within the building, and those from the community have an opportunity to access those jobs. So they specifically put in a targeted training program for those who live around the facility so that they could take advantage of the jobs that would be in the building. And then lastly, with respect to businesses that want to do business with that company, they aggressively, and they did so without a requirement, sought businesses that would help with the ongoing operation of that project. Now, that's one example of a very specific agreement that the City of Miami had with a developer that went forward with a P3 project. And they did so in a way that recognized you not only have to include people in the project itself, but build the pipeline through training opportunities so that others can participate in other projects.
Well, who did that accounting? Because like I say, it just so happens that I'm out the Overtown area. And we're at the same project you're talking about, I'm talking about. Because I understand you said there was some type of accountability. Who's doing the watching? Who's doing the accountability? Because I don't know. Because, you know, I've seen that building go from the ground up to the completion of it. And I can say without any doubt that a large number of people who apply for that position who are from that community, they weren't given the opportunity to apply to a lot of those employees. They didn't come out of that Overtown area.
Well, I can...
I mean, I don't know. I mean, just tell me who did the accounting, and then maybe I need to deal with them, because I know you're only going by the information that's provided to you, which is a great thing. But who's watching the watcher? Who's the accounting?
Actually, I can not only share with you what I've been told, but I can share with you what I've personally seen, because I was personally involved in that. And I can assure you that both the city and CRA, as well as the developer, made sure that that took place. But in that particular case, you may want to contact the CRA directly.
Okay, Mark, okay. We have to run.
All right, thank you for your time. You have a great day.
Thank you very much. Tell me, how do P3s affect the bidding process on these projects?
Typically, and most of your listeners believe that when you're doing a government job, the low bidder gets the job. In a P3 process, it can be a combination of ways to proceed. One is if you're doing a bid process and the county solicits from others a proposal, and they respond to that proposal based on a series of needs that the government has identified. They've indicated how they would go about accomplishing those needs. Government selects the highest ranked or the lowest priced proposer. Or there can be an unsolicited proposal. I, as a private sector company or either for-profit or not-for-profit, can come to government and say, I see a need, I hear there's a need, I'm going to give you my proposal on how I think we can address that need together. But in both cases, there is a public process. In the state of Florida, we have what is called and referred to as sunshine law and open government law. that requires certain meetings to be open to the public, that requires certain documents to be available to the public.
Is the bidding process included in that?
That is correct. That is correct. And the bidding process is absolutely open to the public.
Now, there are certain components.
That's right. It's open to the public, but with whom you may speak and influence so that there is not an unfair competitive advantage given to one side or another, or unfair influence that prevents the government from making the right decision. He's right. There are certain processes. However, regardless of what those processes are, the process is public and the documentation is open to the public for inspection.
But low bidders don't necessarily get awarded contracts.
No, sometimes it's about the solution that's being provided. And sometimes a low bidder may not have the capacity to deliver. You can bid a low number, but not be able to deliver on the project that's necessary. So government typically looks at both what it is they're looking to procure, whether that entity can actually deliver, and the price that it would cost.
Isn't there a chance for mischief there, though, if the government representatives perhaps have a stake in a certain contractor?
Well, one of the things that our government has done, and it's been the law in the state of Florida for quite some time,
either known or unknown,
is to make sure that no success fees, for example, can be part of a particular government contract.
So now, that what's you, that?
That means that if I would get paid as a lawyer or a lobbyist a success fee if I'm able to deliver a contract. That is legally impermissible. So that the cost of doing the project is the cost of doing the project. And that's the way it is currently structured.
Let's take an email here. Of course, once again, there's no one here from Miami-Dade County, but what about a metro rail to Miami Beach? I believe the project was once called the Bay Link. Is a public-private partnership viable for that important connection? Mr. Dotson, you're familiar with Miami Beach. What about that metro rail link to Miami Beach?
Well, first, I'm sure that the commissioner can add to that, but the Bay Link from the city of Miami over to Miami Beach is a critical component to allowing access to the beach without further burdening the traffic infrastructure and issues that they have. Of course, it is viable.
Back in the day when Metro Rail was being planned, it was the taxicab operators who fought it quite vehemently.
Yeah, there has to be a solution. I think you start with recognizing that traffic going to the beach already is problematic, and we must come up with a solution. Is the Bay Link the solution? I would just submit to you there are probably multiple solutions, and it's up to us to come up with the right one. But whatever one we come up with, public-private partnership could absolutely be a part of that. In fact, Miami-Dade County, since you mentioned them, recently went through a public-private partnership procurement to replace 136 Metrorail cars. A Italian-based company, Ansaldo Breda, was selected. There's an opportunity there for that company to not only manufacture those cars, but maybe even do something here in Miami-Dade County that would provide jobs here. So public-private partnerships not only address the specific issue, the transportation issue, but depending on how that particular company moves forward with their business, there could be collateral benefits, significant collateral benefits, i.e. jobs, that go well beyond the fulfillment of a particular contract.
Joe, on the Bay Link project, that was really Mayor David Dermer's opposition that really kind of killed that 04-05 time frame. And part of it was it heavy rail, light rail, the type of rail, and how will you do the infrastructure. On the other issues, I mean, it is... Anyway, I'll let it go.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Tell me, Commissioner, if some of your constituents say that they think that the public-private operations, partnerships, are actually holding the interests of developers over taxpayers, how would you respond?
Well, if we lived in a perfect society and we had perfect elected officials and we had perfect constituents.
I thought we did here.
I don't think we do, and I think you would concede that. I don't think there's any need for this. But we live in an imperfect society. We're imperfect people, and we make imperfect decisions. And we've lived on a mountain of imperfect decisions. There's such a need right now in Miami-Dade County for the Bay Link. There's such a need for alternate forms of mass transportation as we densify the downtown. There is such a need for water. There's such a need to deal with global warming and rising tides, especially on the beach, if it even can be accomplished. I bet if we were to stack up our needs, I could paint you a picture of $100 billion of need. Do you think there's $100 billion of taxpayers out there? There isn't. So you're going to have to figure out, you're going to have to prioritize what are our priorities, and we're going to have to come up with, we're going to put everything in our quiver, so to speak. Every solution we can come up with, we're going to see how Barcelona did it. We're going to look how Madrid did it. We're going to look at how London did it. How is Paris done it? And I think what Al Dotson is saying eloquently is part of this solution is PPPs. Some of it may be raising taxes and saying, you know what, I'm not going to risk it. I don't want anybody paying other than water and sewer, you know, that extra $150 a month. By the way, do I care if I pay Joe Cooper, Inc. $120 a month for my extra water, or if I pay Miami-Dade County Water and Sewer $150 a month? Because I'd rather pay the smaller of the two. All I'm suggesting is it's got to be part of the conversation. It's got to be a part of the debate. The needs in this region are so great and have been delayed so long, again, through poor thought process of elected officials, that we now have this mountain of issues like a plane that has all this deferred maintenance. It can no longer fly. We're close to that. That's what Al was saying. You can't even get to the beach and enjoy yourself because you spend an hour and a half getting there. By the time you get there, you're so frustrated and you're so pissed off you got to pay $35 to park. You don't even want to go back.
We're talking about public-private partnerships in South Florida with Mark Sarnoff. He's Miami Commissioner, also Jillian Thomas and Al Dotson. One more short break. We'll be back. And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker, also Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff, Jillian Thomas, she's the president and CEO of the Miami Science Museum, and also attorney Al Dotson. He's in charge of government relations and land use and a partner at Bills and Sumberg. Let's take a few more phone calls. Our number is 1-800-743-9576. We have a couple of lines open. 1-800-743-WLRN. Next caller, this is, forgive me if I'm wrong, Haikal?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Thank you for taking my call. Uh-huh. Yes, you got it. I have two comments. The first one regarding the partnerships. It's been mentioned many times that we're coming at the tail end of these partnerships that have been used throughout the world. Many cities use them successfully. I hope that's a code word for us being able to take the most advantage of them and make the best out of them, being that the road has been paved for us, that we'll get the most benefit out of using them without jeopardizing the taxpayers with any issues down the road. That's my first comment. The second thing is about the Bicentennial Park. It was abandoned for many, many years, and to tell you the truth, it's a space that is so central to downtown Miami. I think an open space where people can wind down and really enjoy the city, a green space. The museum is wonderful. I love the museum. I always took my kids to them to that museum, to the Museum of Science in Vizcaya, and it's been wonderful. You know, it could have perhaps been a space better used for just a neutral space where tourists can, yes, they can enjoy the beach. It's fairly close to the beach. They can enjoy downtown Bayside, but also have just. And I'm trying to compare it here to downtown Atlanta. You know, you have the Coca-Cola Museum, you have the CNN Center, you have that big aquarium. It's a wonderful space, but when you come out of any of those places, with many, many businesses in downtown there, when you come out of those places, there is that green space that's just you walk through, it just really helps you wind down and enjoy the spirit of the city. And that could have been used in downtown Miami.
Jillian Thomas, would you comment?
Absolutely. I've got two areas I'd like to comment. On your first question, I have been part of four different big regeneration projects in different countries, actually. This is the third country I've worked in. And it's always really, really important to be really clear at the beginning about what the expectations are of every partner that's involved in it. That's the single most critical factor. There's no reason why developers can't make money out of it. There's no reason why jobs can't result. There's no reason why you can't get a fabulous regeneration. But you need to be clear about what it is at the beginning. So that's that one. And then for the museum, I am fairly confident that when it's finished there in the park with the art museum alongside and the fabulous plaza between the two, that you will find something that is more active and more enjoyable than just the park space on its own. It will really give you the fabulous views of the park and the ocean. It also protects the park from the noise of I-395. But within the museum, you're getting an aquarium, a planetarium, a wide range of interactive spaces, a roof terrace where you can look at urban gardening and hydroponics. You're getting such a wide range of different sorts of activities that will really put Miami on the map as that city for the future where you can find real creative and technical expertise in a way that at the moment it's got a great sort of artsy edge, but it really hasn't achieved what it needs to be that creative city of the future. So there's two strands to what we're doing. It's a fabulous tourist attraction, it's a wonderful educational resource, and it will really help Miami situate itself as one of those great cities of the future. You won't find a really big international city that hasn't got this cultural heart downtown with fabulous buildings by great architects and wonderful content. So I think as much as you've loved our existing museum, I hope you find the things that you love in the new museum, but expanded and much bigger and better.
The Arts Center gives a lot of free tickets to students, et cetera. Do you know at the Science Museum, are you going to be doing, or I mean, is it going to be pay to get in exclusively, or will there be
major? Run already a big open access program to try and get people to have access to the museum, which we fundraise for that. And yes, we'll be doing separate activities to make sure that people can have access to it. It's a big component of what we do.
And another caller, this is Leslie in North Miami. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So far, I've heard a lot of discussions about risks and profit, both from the government side and the private sector. What role does quality of life play or should play in those developments?
I think that's a really important component. I think that when you're trying to develop these new cultural and educational centres, how you encourage people to have a greater quality of life for the future is a really important aspect. So the fact that you're creating a location where people can meet up and enjoy themselves is very important. And then I think the content of what you're doing is also important. So for us, we have a big strand around wellness and health, which will encourage people to have an active life, and also around understanding how we, in this little narrow edge between the Everglades and the ocean, really can best enjoy and love and protect the environment. So I think long term, it has a really big impact on the population. And I think in the short term, coming and having a really great opportunity to enjoy yourselves with your family and with your friends is something that's very special for everybody.
All I would add to that is to the extent we're improving our water system, that adds to the quality of life. To the extent that we're addressing our traffic needs, that adds to the quality of life. In connection with the Miami Beach Convention Center, there's going to be a park component where right now there's nothing but asphalt that adds to the quality of life. I think that...
What sort of park would that be?
There's going to be an interactive a park that people can come and enjoy themselves. In fact,
everything's interactive today. Right?
That's exactly right. And regenerating. What we're looking at doing is connecting the Lincoln Road activity to the Miami Beach Convention Center and allowing those who live in the area already to have a place that is a green space beyond the asphalt or instead of the asphalt that is currently there.
And I think encouraging people to be able to walk, that's one of those big downtown things that's really important. So the waterfront walkways and the way everybody can get between the buildings is a really important component that has a big impact long-term on people's quality of life.
Can I just say something?
Certainly.
Since I've been in office, by the time I leave, there will be 21 acres of park in a downtown urban core that didn't exist before. And I'm a little bit like you, Joe. A park should be a park, and I just believe in trees and maybe a little place to throw a frisbee. I'm not that big in programming. I'm not that big in people know what to do. They just forgot what to do because they were so their thumbs do it for them, and they don't get outside and they don't get to do the things they do without an electronic apparatus. But I'm very proud to say I think parks are really what make us detox us from our day. And I've put parks on Brickell. There'll be 14 more acres of a park in the Grove. I've put parks downtown. So I'm a real believer in parks.
Well, I certainly want to thank everyone on our panel, Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker. Also, I want to thank Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff.
Thank you.
Also, Jillian Thomas. She's the president and CEO of the Miami Science Museum.
Thank you.
And, of course, also we want to thank attorney Al Dotson. He's a partner at Bills and Sumberg in charge of government relations and land use practice.
Thank you all very much.
And thanks for being with us today. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Follow us on the Topical Currents Facebook page for links and authors and such. We also have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow's program looks at America's most selective public high schools, which serve exceptionally able and high-achieving youngsters. Have they been shortchanged while we're preoccupied by No Child Left Behind? To the calendar. On this day, 1931, 82 years ago, the birth of boxing's Don King. He once ran book and was convicted of stomping an employee to death in 1966. And on this day, 1948, 65 years ago, the birth of Led Zeppelin singer Robert Plant in West Bromwich, England. He once worked at Woolworths. He wrote the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven, considered by some the greatest song of all time. One more while we ponder moral imperatives. On this day in 2003, 10 years ago, Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore is suspended after refusing to comply with a federal court order to remove a large stone with the Ten Commandments from the Supreme Court building. And we leave with a thought from Don King, whose weird hairdo is described by comedian Kathleen Madigan as though he just jumped from a skyscraper. Quote, Martin Luther King took us to the mountaintop. I want to take us to the bank. Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making public radio your companion today. Next, get into the here and now from where else but NPR News.